on time, 30 minutes late. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Careless Whispers here on CLNS Media. My name is Matt Rury. And Calvin, I think this is for you.
Play the music.
Yeah. We got a champion.
Ready?
We got a champion in our midst.
10 or 17.
Yeah, can you believe it?
We're tied, baby.
Summer League champion.
The Celtics and Lakers are tied. 17 banners each. Count it.
Do you even get a trophy for this?
Yeah, they do get a trophy.
Oh,
fact,
wow.
The Lakers get all kinds of trophies because Lonzo Ball also got Summer League MVP. He got a trophy. Kyle Kuzma got Summer League Finals MVP. He gets a trophy. And you get a trophy. And you get a trophy. And everybody gets a trophy, right?
I love it.
Everybody gets a trophy. Yeah.
That's America. We love America.
We do. We do. Yeah, man. Feels good. I mean, I didn't, come prepared to make a statement. I don't know if you expected that from me or not, but I have a few people to thank off the top of my head if you want, but maybe we should just move on with the show.
Yeah, I don't think we need to have you thanking anybody out there, especially since I don't even know who they had to go through on the way to the finals. I know that the Celtics didn't get to the semis even because they rested all of their players for the most part. Seriously, do you find any meaning whatsoever in the Summer League as far as the wins and losses are concerned? And to follow up on that, if the answer is not at all, is there any meaning in Summer League for individual players? Like, do you feel better about Lonzo Ball than you did 2 weeks ago?
I mean, I think that you can find meaning on a certain level. It's funny. I'm glad that you bring this up because, yes, Summer League overreactions are ridiculous, and I've always had that stance, and I continue to have that stance, even in the wake of the Lakers having a successful Summer League. But I think that there's a difference between saying, hey, this guy played well in Summer League and he's going to be a star, and like this is what this guy is good at, and this is what this guy is not good at, and this is what he needs to work on. And it I think the eyeball test has some value, but what I don't think is like just looking at the stats and being like, this guy dominated in one Summer League MVP. I was curious, so I went back and saw and looked at who won last year's Summer League MVP, and it's a guy named Tyus Jones. And I don't know if you could make the argument that playing time has something to do with this, but Tyus Jones averaged 3 points off the bench for the Cavaliers last year and shot like 34%. Now again, playing time, not wanting to play rookies, whatever you want to say. Like, I think that playing well in Summer League doesn't necessarily translate to the NBA. But I think, like, again, and I do want to get into the individual players. We'll get into it. But, like, the actual Summer League championship for the Lakers, do I think that's going to, like, roll over to the season at all? No, I don't. But, you still can watch guys out there and go, well, especially, I think even more so, like, the second-year guys. I'm sure, did you watch any Summer League? I'm sure you did, right?
Yeah, I watched as much as I could. I wasn't glued to it, but I enjoyed seeing Jason Tatum go out there and score buckets and have some nice mid-range game, even though I know that the league is going away from the mid-range game at this point. You say that to me basically every time we start talking about good shots against bad shots.
It is ironic because when people complain about Lonzo, they complain about his lack of mid-range game. At the same time, it's like saying nobody wants a mid-range shot. It's just like a combination of things. But anyway, yeah, I have some thoughts on Tatum as well as a couple of other guys. I watched a couple of the Celtics Summer League games. So, take all of these thoughts with a grain of salt because, watching this, I don't know how well anything is going to translate. I only know, like, what I saw and, what I think. But I'm definitely not going, Kyle Kuzma dominated Summer League, so that means he's going to automatically be a baller in the NBA. No, but I could still talk about, like, what I liked from them, right? And same thing with you guys. And what I do.
Yeah.
Like.
Absolutely. So, and I mean, but you just need to make sure that you put it out there that you understand that Summer League, like you just did, Summer League is not end all be all by any means. You have to put it in perspective. And guys have good performances all the time in Summer League and then disappear. And there are guys that don't perform all that well in Summer League and end up having good careers. So it can go either way.
No, but yeah. But can I just say this for the summer, just as a whole for Summer League? Once again, I want to give credit to LeVar Ball. And the reason why I want to give credit to LeVar Ball, Ray, is because has Summer League ever been this big? I don't ever remember anyone. I don't remember LeBron showing up in Summer League and it being that big of a deal. Like, people, I go on ESPN, there's like a new story about Lonzo Ball every day on ESPN, and the comments are either full of people loving him or people thinking he's. I'm not even just giving credit for, like, LeVar making people like Lonzo. I'm also giving him credit for making people hate Lonzo, because there's plenty of. I feel like nobody is passive on this guy. And for a guy with zero personality, like, every time I actually hear Lonzo interviewed, he sounds like the most bland person in the world. That's like what he does on the court aside. Like, yeah, there's excitement to that. But I just mean as like a fulcrum for liking or disliking him. If it was just him by himself, I feel like no one would really have people would have opinions on his game, but like on his personality, I feel like he'd be a wash. Instead, he's like so divisive. He's like the new Tim Tebow in a completely different way, regardless of like how whether or not his skills translate. In that sense, he is like Tim Tebow as well, in that he has a totally different game. That, like, it's questionable whether or not it'll translate, and that remains to be seen. But, like, I'm just talking about the marketing right now, Ray. The marketing is real, and I think it's paid off. I think he's going to end up getting one of these shoe deals that he's setting up now, and you can tell me if you disagree, but what do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to just comment on your thing about Summer League in general, because back when LeBron was coming into the league, Summer League had only been alive for 2 years at that point. So just the event in general, part of it was held in Boston. There were smaller events throughout the country that they held, and it didn't really get big for a few years after that. And Vegas didn't have it until the year after LeBron was there. So you can't just credit LeVar Ball for all of that, but either way.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant LeBron showing up this year. I didn't mean LeBron showing up.
Oh, this year.
Yes.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
That could be true. But I think that there were big names at the top of this draft, and they played in the Summer League, and guys wanted to see it. But in general, the Summer League is getting bigger over the last few years, is what I was really trying to harp on. But the shoe deal, I mean, yeah, he's going to get a shoe deal. I can't believe that nobody would sign on with him. So he's not going to be the big baller brand for the rest of his life. You know, I would imagine he's going to get a deal.
But I'm just saying, Rudy, what shoes he was wearing was like, those were like headlines on the internet. You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
How he played in different shoes. Like, this guy's ability to, like, I don't understand why anyone cares. You know what I mean? I'm a Lakers fan. I guess he has big baller brand. I'm just saying, this whole thing, call it a stunt if you want, but like he's turned basically anything he does into a story, or he really, LeVar has. And so with that respect, I think that people, it seemed like all eyes were on him in the Summer League, and there are arguments to be made against certain aspects of his play in Summer League, and we'll get to that element in a second. I only bring it up to say that, like, I think that his persona factored into him getting the MVP almost as much as anything else.
Yeah, I would believe that. And if we want to really dig deep into his stats in the Summer League, we can. But overall, I think that it's probably just a more of a hype type of thing as far as the MVP is concerned. I don't know who's actually voting on this stuff, which writers are involved, but I would imagine it's not the writers that vote on the real MVP in the league. So. But Calvin, you know what? We pretty rarely get callers around here. I have a feeling somebody saw me tweet out the fact that we are on the air, because we have an Atlanta area code popping up on the board right now. So shall we see who this is and what they have to say about Summer League or something else for that matter?
Or something else.
Here
we go. Whatever they want to talk about.
Welcome to Careless Whispers. thank you for joining us. How's it going?
Hey, indeed. Hey, I'm good, man. Thanks for taking the call, man. I'm glad glad you guys are willing to listen to somebody else from outside.
No, man, we love calls. No one ever just wants to talk to us. What's your name, brother?
This is Naj in Atlanta.
Naj?
Yes.
Right on, man. Go ahead. What do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, well, first things first, as great Hubie Brown said, Summer League tells you who can play and who can't play. Like, that's it. Like, you don't know if they're a great NBA player or a good one. All you're finding out is they're either rotational or at least going to be on a roster. When we saw Greg Oden averaging like 10 fouls a game because they had unlimited fouls, that was a reason to raise your eyebrows. So Lonzo showed what? He could turn the corner. He showed the vision that we all knew he had. The question marks about his foot speed on defense, who he can guard, things like that, still there. But the whole storm that they've created, his father created, he has gym hysteria. And that's something that's really, really underrated. When a guy walks in and the crowd starts buzzing or does anything, and you see the whispering and you know, just the excitement level, this narrative has created that for him. Usually you get that from mixtape stuff or something like that. But this dude is – they've created a kind of rock star-like situation because you got so many people, as you said, it's polarized. They either love him or hate him. And that's the perfect sweet spot to be in. So they're going to be able to get the shoe deal. We'll see what this kid really is, you know, when the season starts. I'm not a big Lonzo fan, but, you know, I wanted to see him succeed this weekend. But overall, like we said, this is still Summer League. Deion Glover, back-to-back Summer League MVP. If that doesn't scare the hell out of any Laker fan. So, you know, it is what it is, man, at a certain point. And I want to get into it with you guys on that whole mid-range thing, too, when you get a chance. But I just wanted to comment on Summer League first.
Quickly, though, from a marketing standpoint, LaVar Ball has really hit this thing right on the head. You have to give the guy credit for that. He certainly drummed up the hype for his son and his other two sons, for that matter. Because I know when they become eligible for the NBA draft, he's going to do the same thing for them, assuming that they're going to be good enough to make it. I doubt that they're going to be a number one pick candidate, but if they're even close, you know he's gonna drum it up for them too because he's a marketing genius. Calvin, you want to throw anything out there right now?
Yeah, I do because I do feel like, again, and as aesthetically pleasing as his game is in terms of the passes, I can't ever remember like a transcendent passer becoming, you know, and I don't want to call him an icon, but and I'm not really talking about on the court right now because, like you said, it is Summer League, but just in terms of the ability to generate buzz in going into the season, like, I can't remember a rookie getting this kind of attention, either positive or negative, before he played a single game beyond Summer League. And again, that might not translate, but that has entirely to do with the marketing. So I think some of it has to do with his passing, but I don't remember, like, John Stockton and Ricky Rubio and guys like that getting crazy attention just for their ability to pass. I feel like passing is, like, not – usually it's a guy who has, like, Russell Westbrook-level athleticism, you know, coming out of college, like a Dennis Smith type, where you're going to be, like, blown away or even Fultz. But the fact is that his game is, like, not necessarily the most marketable, and yet they've created this sort of sensation around him. It's just impressive to me. But
fans on the horns of a dilemma. Either you love him or hate him. Either you want him to fail spectacularly or you want him to succeed. So by putting you in that space, anything he does, the little punch pass, you know what I mean? It seems glorified, and it's YouTube ready. I mean, Twitter ready, quick clips to send. So
let me ask you guys this. I think that right now the Lakers have a guard on their roster who's actually a better scorer than Lonzo Ball in Jordan Clarkson. Calvin, I think that Luke Walton is not going to be afraid to pull the trigger on putting Ball on the bench if the Lakers struggle with him on the floor and he can't knock down shots for whatever reason, because Clarkson has proven that he can score in this league. So am I crazy for thinking that, or is there going to be a short leash on this kid?
No, you're crazy for thinking that. And the reason why you're crazy for thinking that is because, I'm not a fan of Jordan Clarkson's game at all, but more importantly, Jordan Clarkson is, he's like a tunnel vision style shooting guard. Like he's Monte Ellis. And he plays defense even worse than Monte Ellis. So not that Lonzo really showed that much defensively, although I think he's better off ball than Jordan Clarkson. But I just don't think Jordan Clarkson has like the the court vision or even the mindset to be a passing style point guard. And I think Lonzo will have a long leash just because they don't really have a traditional point guard on the roster now that they traded D'Angelo Russell, and you can even make the argument that he's a combo guard. But you look down the rest of the lineup, Josh Hart, this kid they drafted, is not a point guard. They signed, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, not a point guard. All their guards are basically, you know, more off-ball guys than or Jordan Clarkson is a shooting guard, but he's like a slasher more than a distributor. So I just think based on functionality, he'll have a long leash.
Yeah, because he can shoot badly and still play well, and Jordan Clarkson has no idea about how to run a team. He's just not a point guard. He's a scoring guy. Now, they're going to need buckets because they're a young team, so they're going to struggle at times. So Clarkson is probably going to shoot a lot more than he will. But, man, him running the team is a struggle. It reminds you of Kyrie. Like, I can get buckets, I just can't distribute.
Right.
Like, don't ask me to run this.
Do you have thoughts on Tatum?
Excuse me?
You wanted to talk about the mid-range thing, or I didn't know if you wanted to talk about Tatum specifically.
Oh, the mid-range thing. Yeah, the mid-range thing is going a little too far just because we ingest so much basketball information now that we start making things into hard tenets that we have to apply to everybody, and it doesn't really work that way. I don't want Kevin Johnson shooting a three-pointer. I want him shooting from that free-throw line extended where he was actually a good shooter. Tony Parker, same type of thing. So that mid-range thing needs to be dependent on who you're talking about. But we kind of miss the forest for the trees when we go to the analytics and say, well, threes are still a better shot just because percentage and it's an extra point. Good shooters, yes, I completely agree. But there are certain guys, man, look, you shouldn't be giving three-point license to everybody. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
Some guys, they don't.
I couldn't agree more. I think Jay Crowder is one of those guys, and he's developed a better three-point shot over the last couple of years. But when he first came to the Celtics, I didn't want him shooting anywhere near the three-point line, and he could knock down that mid-range jumper.
But the thing about the mid-range shot, though, it's not just the shot in and of itself. Obviously, you know, the argument is, like, if you're going to take a mid-range shot, you should try to go to the rim, right? But I think that I agree with you somewhat because I think that argument breaks down in the playoffs when every team is defending the three-point line in the rim extremely hard, and sometimes the only baskets you're really going to get are mid-range, and you better be able to hit those. But I also think it's, like, I think the idea that, like, someone can't hit a mid-range shot, the thing about most mid-range shots is that they require – you know, usage of the clock. And I look at Tatum, and that's sort of my slight issue with, like, as well as Tatum played, and he showed excellent footwork, I don't know if many of those shots are going to consistently be there for him in the Celtics offense. I keep hearing this comparison to Paul Pierce, and it's cute, but it's cute because it's like Celtics fans do this all the time, right? Like Jeff Green, James Worthy. Remember that classic?
Oh boy.
The Jeff Green, James Worthy comparison from a couple years ago. I just feel like, you know, a couple of summer league games, you might want to slow down on the Paul Pierce comparison. But the guy you sort of reminded me of just watching him out there kind of was Evan Turner. And I think that it's fine, but like him, you know, holding the ball, posting up in the high post and hitting a turnaround jumper, that's like a 5-second play. And, in the NBA, you're going to argue, especially with a good offense, that you can pass the ball three times in that scenario, try to dribble past your man or try to get a look at a shot at the rim or a three-pointer, right? That's the way the NBA is going. And I just wonder – I think, you know,
that's a pecking order thing, though. That's a pecking order thing. On the Celtics team, in the pecking order that it is, he will not be getting those ISO or clear out situations to where he can take up that 5 seconds like you're talking about.
Right.
Like, nah, young blood, get over there, set a pick, run through. Like, that's your job here. You're not going to be a ball stopper because you haven't earned that yet. And the Paul Pierce stuff, like you guys said, that's ridiculous. Anybody out there, just watch Paul Pierce's feet, young Paul Pierce. Pull up a tape, watch his feet, and you'll understand why that dude could come in looking unconditioned without a muscle tone to his body and give people buckets for decades. Because it's genius, man. Watch Paul's feet and you'll learn.
You're absolutely right, and we appreciate the call. Appreciate you listening. This was one of the best calls we've had in probably 5 or 6 years around here, and that's not just because we don't get calls very often. Usually, they're not as informed as you are, so we appreciate it, and we hope to hear from you again, all right?
Yeah,
indeed. I'll just listen. Don't hang me up. I'm going to just kick back and listen to you guys.
Perfect. Sounds good, man.
Sure, man.
We'll talk to you soon.
Respect.
Love that stuff, Calvin.
So what are your thoughts on what you've seen from Tatum?
So I think that Taj just hit it on the head with the footwork as far as Pierce is concerned. I just wanted to touch on that because people are comparing Tatum to Pierce. And Pierce's footwork is what got him where he was. And some people will call him clunky. You know, they look at his game and they say that he shouldn't be what he was. And I feel like
right?
he knew where to or how to get to the spot on the floor that he knew he was going to knock down the shot 80% of the time or whatever. And he was a big, strong athlete. And he could get there, and if you couldn't stop him from getting there, then he was going to knock down the shot. And his confidence grew and grew, and it was just – that's kind of what we started to see from Tatum in the summer league. If he got to the spot where he was comfortable, he was knocking down shots left and right. So I'm not going to compare the two of them strictly because of the magnitude of Paul Pierce's existence in the Celtics organization. But you can see why people would want Tatum or why people would think that he would be able to fill some of that void as far as the type of player that Pierce was because he's knocking down those mid-range shots, and that was Pierce's bread and butter. But you know what, Calvin? Even Paul Pierce, towards the end of his career, started either going to the hoop more or stepping back and knocking down threes. So even he kind of went away from the mid-range jumper, even though it was still perfect for him when he needed it. But that's just the way the league is going now. So while I like the fact that Tatum can score in that area, he's got a lot of work to do as far as his offense is concerned. He might be one of the more polished offensive players in the draft right now, but he still has a lot of work to do compared to the NBA. So Summer League is no indicator as far as I'm concerned, because it's just a step out of college. It's basically D League, probably not even the D League. I bet D League competition is better. And I just, I like what I saw, and I hope it builds his confidence a little bit, but when he is actually playing with the big boys, I'm not so sure it's going to be effective right away.
I mean, I think Tatum in Summer League sort of, you know, they are what we thought they were, right? Like I think that like he showed a lot
yes.
of polish, maybe even more polished than like. But I think like, you know, going into the draft, that was his strength. Is like he's a guy who knows how to put the ball in the hole.
Absolutely.
I think the question has always been like, does he function in the modern NBA, and like is he going to fit in a modern NBA offense? Because I think that his I think obviously when you compare him to Pierce. One of the most underrated things about Pierce was his strength and the fact that, like, he could finish through contact. He liked creating contact. Pierce was far from soft, and not that Tatum is soft, but obviously, like, in the strength department, if he wants to play like Paul Pierce, he has a long way to go
yeah.
in terms of the physicality, right?
And
but
he's young. He's got a lot of growing up to do in general, for sure. But,
right.
I mean, Pierce wasn't guaranteed to fight through traffic in his first season, his rookie season. He tried for his life, and
right.
he was strong. But by the time, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, as he grew in his NBA career and as a man, he became a lot stronger and still kept that quickness with his feet. So that's what Tatum needs to try to do in general.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with that. And again, I'm not. It's not even that I'm down on Tatum. It's like I'm not sure how he fits with the Celtics. Just is kind of where I'm at with this, and I don't know how many minutes he's going to get this season. It'll be interesting. He'll probably get the Jaylen season, the first season treatment, and we can get to Jaylen.
That's
second.
What I was thinking.
He'll probably get he'll have nights where a guy's hurt, and maybe less nights because Avery Bradley's not there. It's Kai who you could count on to. Missed, you know, 20-25 games a season and rotate guys in there, but not to take a shot at him, but anyway. So without
wow,
I had to cover myself because it sounded like a cheap shot momentarily, but that's not what I meant. You know what? He's not a Celtic anymore. Screw Avery Bradley. No.
Wow. Screw his teams, but not him. I want him to succeed. I hope Avery Bradley makes all team for all first defensive team. He makes an all-star game, and Detroit loses 81 games. They can win one.
Yeah, I was kidding anyway. I actually like Avery Bradley, but yeah. I think he'll get those scenarios, and I think with the second unit, it might be better for him to not be a starter, because it's like with all those guys out there, like I can't imagine like Isaiah standing around waiting for Jason Tatum to like
nope.
to you know turn around and do a fadeaway jumper while Isaiah's standing there, and Al Horford's going to be trying to get the offensive rebound. I just
right.
I think that yeah. I'd like
well,
to see
you,
him be...
you saw it. You saw it last year with Jaylen Brown, and he had to change his game a little bit. He's a slasher. He's a high flyer. He wants to be cutting to the basket at all times. But the Celtics asked him to sometimes spot up in the corner or hang up on the 3-point line and not be the guy that's in motion in the offense. So he had to be able to knock down shots, and he showed the ability to do so and earned playing time. Jason Tatum is a guy that scores on his own for the most part, right? He's not a guy that's a spot-up shooter. So they're going to have to find a way to work him into the offense when he's on the floor. And maybe that means that he doesn't play it unless Isaiah's on the bench. Who knows?
Well, speaking of Jaylen, what did you think of his summer league performance?
Jaylen, I didn't really care too much about his actual play because I knew that he was
good
one of the better players on the floor.
Right.
You know? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So second year guys, and I'll get to Brandon Ingram in a second, but like guys you've already seen playing in the NBA, like if they play poorly,
right.
it's not the end of the world. I mean,
so
I think you came out in that first game and he dominated and he looked
right.
He showed
what he can do and he showed what he can be. And you know what? It's more important to me that a player like that shows leadership qualities and takes over for the team and leads the guys in the huddle and backs up the coaching staff. And he definitely showed that as well. He tried to take Tatum
yeah.
under his wing. He was good with the younger players, the rookies that are on the team. So that is what I look for in a second-year summer league player. And I think Jaylen Brown passed with flying colors.
Yeah, and then after that, I just thought he was pressing. And I think, you know, He knew he had the role of leader of the team, and he knew that like that the pressure was on him to put on great performances. But I don't think that I don't think Jaylen Brown trying to go one on one with his man every time is like the best usage of Jaylen Brown. Just because while he has a great explosive first step, his ball handling generally is like it's not the the tightest in the NBA. I just don't think like that role for him in his second year is like ideal for a situation. I think he'll be fine, and I just think sort of he was pressing a little bit, and he's not the type
yeah.
of player who you want to see
play. And you know what? Maybe that was all part of the plan. Maybe the Celtics decided to just sort of let him do his thing. They think that he's the best player on the floor, and they said, you know what? Why don't you go work on the things that we think you need to work on? Like taking a guy off the dribble on your own if you're put in an isolation situation, or like trying to get somebody in the popcorn popper, as Cedric Maxwell likes to say, and do a little mid-range turnaround jumper or get to the lane and get fouled. Maybe they just sort of let Jaylen Brown loose on purpose to say, listen, look at these mistakes that you've made when we've done this and allowed you to play however you want. You're going to have to work on all of this if you're going to fit into the system and play in that manner as well. So who knows? That's just speculation on my part, but it makes sense to me.
So I've heard a couple of NBA analysts say that they think that Tatum is already better than Brown. Do you agree with that assessment, or where are you at with that?
I need to see more of Tatum. I'm going to plead the fifth, I guess. But if I had to say, I would say no, he's not better than Brown. He's a better scorer, it seems.
Right.
It seems like he's definitely the better offensive player. But and Brad Stevens seems to be sold on how hard he works defensively. But I just look at Jaylen Brown, and I think he sees the floor very well. I think he knows where to be on the basketball court a little bit better. His awareness seems to be better. And I think that he's a better defender overall as well.
I agree. I think he's a better defender. I think he's better in catch and shoot situations. I think he'll be better. He'll be better as a role player than Jason Tatum will. And he'll fit into a situation better than I think Jason Tatum will. Who knows? You know what Tatum is down the line, but like, I think it's a huge overreaction to say Tatum's already better than Brown. Anyway, real quick on Zizic, I think he's too slow. I thought it when I saw his video. I know he did better down the stretch of Summer League. I just think in the NBA, I don't see, especially, you know, when teams start pushing it, I don't see how he plays more than the Tyler Zeller role on next year's Celtics team. Tell me I'm crazy.
Nope, you're not crazy, because you know what? They signed Aaron Baines, too. So he's going to be the one that's getting more playing time at center, I believe. I don't think Zizic is ready either. He looks like he's strong enough, and he might have the toughness to play. And I liked some of his moves in the post that he was showing. But when he's matched up against actual centers in the NBA, I don't think he's going to really be able to hang a whole lot. So I don't know how they're going to utilize him. But I think that if they ever end up going big with a 7-footer on the floor, it's going to be Baines over Zizic.
All right, so, yeah. So over to the Lakers real quick. Lonzo didn't shoot that well until he did, sort of over the second half of the thing. So I don't know, you know, it's too small of a sample size. He started shooting better later in the thing. I still don't know if his shot translates. It may or may not. He had range in college, so I'm not trying to give up on that one way or the other. But I think he's definitely – I think the thing that Summer League showed me is that, like, even if he's not the best shooter, I think he could stay on the floor. But I think he can – if he becomes a good three-point shooter, I think that'll make all the difference in whether or not he's, you know, an actual good NBA starter. But I think he can find a role just getting out on the break and getting the team going in that respect. If nothing else, that's sort of my takeaway from him. What do you think?
I've been questioning his shot even when he was in college, and people have scolded me all the time where they poo-poo my opinion on him because I don't really believe that he's a great scorer/shooter in general. So I don't know. I think it's time to move on from Summer League.
Well, I will say this for him real quick, and I guess this was a college thing too, but I think it doesn't get reported, you know, well enough. It's like he's a really good rebounder for a guard. He gets an excellent position, and I think that'll translate to the NBA because he sort of is really good at.
Is that where the comparison to Jason Kidd comes from? I guess.
Shooting. I think it's that. I don't think it's shooting so much as it's you know, pressing the second he gets the ball and pushing it up the court. I think that's really what it is. But the rebounding, obviously, I think the part of his success in terms of being such a great full court passer is that he gets a lot of rebounds. And because the ball doesn't have to be passed to him, giving guys an extra 2 seconds to get down the court, he's the guy getting the ball a lot of the time. Like that helps him immediately throw the ball up the court. But so who knows with Lonzo? We talked about him at all.
All right.
We just
talked about NBA rookies and second year players for far too long. We gave them too much time on our hour long show here tonight. As we passed the half
hour
mark. Yeah, I guess I forgot to tell you that I only scheduled it for an hour. We can go over if we have to, but
okay, no biggie.
We passed 30 minutes just a minute ago. So let's move on, because you've got a list of all the other free agents that have moved and that we haven't talked about because we babble on about other stuff and sometimes we don't do shows, and here I go again. So break out the list. What do we have?
Yeah, we're not good at pacing ourselves. Okay, Ray, I'm just going to go right down the list. Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, good deals or bad deals? Go. Your side. Go.
I mean, good deals for winning, bad deals for the ownership's money.
Yeah, although Kevin Durant signed for less than he could have, so I guess that's a good deal.
Fair enough.
Gordon Hayward, I'm sure you're happy about, right? I'm just going down CBS's ranks of players.
Yeah, that's a good deal for both. I wish Hayward would have considered letting the Celtics keep a little money so Avery Bradley could be the guy that sticks around and they could find a different way to form this roster. But that's more my heart speaking than anything else. Good for both sides.
But Blake Griffin, 5 years, $173 million.
Yeah, this one I'm not so sure. I don't really understand where the Clippers are going with this one, because I've never really bought into Blake Griffin as a cornerstone championship type of player. And I thought that if Chris Paul couldn't get it done with him, then I don't know if there's anybody out there that can. So the way that the Clippers are going, it seems like they had a last-ditch effort and they're grasping to hang on to their superstar. And I don't know if it's going to work out for either one of them. I don't see a championship in their future.
Yeah, here's the thing. They lost Chris Paul and J.J. Redick and Mbah Mute, and they replaced them with Gallinari and Patrick Beverley and somebody else they got in that trade. They lost
Lou Williams.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Lou Williams. Like, the guys they sent out, the Clippers already weren't good enough, but at least they were good enough to be. I'm not of the school of, like, oh, if you can't win a championship, you should just blow up your team and be the worst team in the NBA. But Chris Paul chose to leave. And I think that is the opportunity to, like, maybe rethinking signing your often injured power forward to a 5-year max. It's like, I question that decision when I don't say get nothing for him, but I think a sign and trade, some kind of scenario where, like, you can start your rebuild. I don't think that Gallinari works. Just to throw that one in there right now, I don't think Gallinari works with Blake and DeAndre. I think they go from, you know, the fourth or fifth best team in the West to the seventh best team in the West, and I don't get
it. Doesn't look good for
them.
They're another mid range team in the West. They look like they're not getting better, and they might have gotten worse. So I agree with you that if you're not going to win a championship, don't just tank and like throw away your chances at everything for the next few years. I like the way that other teams have done it and they've been able to sustain and be good. San Antonio is a good example of that, and they've drafted well, et cetera. So I'd prefer the teams go that route. But if you have to be relatively bad for a year to get yourself in order, and that means letting Blake Griffin walk away or try and trading him for something, then I believe that will be on the table for the Los Angeles Clippers. Don't be surprised if somebody comes a calling for Blake Griffin, because they're not afraid of that big contract, and they might have some other contracts that they want to dump off on the other side. So I'm not sold that he's actually going to be a Clipper at the end of that contract.
Maybe that's someone's Boston, huh?
I don't know. I don't know. It depends on what's be going back. Like I said, I don't buy into Blake Griffin, but if the deal was right, I would welcome him here for sure.
All right, Kyle Lowry, 3 years, $100 million, which, you know, sounds like a lot of money, $33 million a year, but it's the new NBA. I think it's the perfect length, because 3 years is about how long I expect Kyle Lowry to still be good, and they don't get stuck with him when he's too old. And I think if you're Toronto, like, it's got to be hard to sign free agents as it is. Lowry's sort of your franchise guy. I know I'm sort of talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but Lowry, is less of a health risk than Griffin. The contract is shorter.
I think Toronto has done a good job here.
Yeah.
Toronto's done a good job here. I would question Lowry on this one, I guess. Are you disappointed if you're Kyle Lowry? Did you think you deserve more, or more years at least? And why didn't you go look somewhere else? I feel like somebody else would have paid him more.
Yeah, I think that's what I did. I think he just probably likes – I know he and DeRozan are like besties. But, yeah, I'm a little disappointed, because I wanted Lowry. I'm a big fan of Kyle Lowry, and I wanted to see him – on a new team. I can't keep, like, thinking that these Raptors have a chance to not look horrible in the playoffs. You know what I mean? So I wanted him to just have a fresh start somewhere. And I thought about the possibility of seeing him in San Antonio, even though I hate the Spurs, but, like, he seemed to be the perfect fit playing alongside Kawhi. Like, can you imagine the sort of defensive switching and all that with him there? Would have been really interesting, but whatever. Paul Millsap, joined the Denver Nuggets 3 years, $90 million as part of a three-way deal.
This is good for Millsap for sure. I think that he's made a pretty good decision getting out of Atlanta anyway. I don't know who else was in the market for him and where he could have gone, but I think that he is he's setting himself up to get another deal at the end of this at some point. Because he's not that old, and he is still performing at a high level. So getting out of Atlanta, no offense, Taj, as far as Paul Millsap is concerned, I think that was a good move because, boy, do they look like they are just stripping that team down.
Paul Millsap is apparently 32, so the three-year deal works perfectly. Maybe Paul Millsap breaks down in that last year, but I think you can do one bad year of a deal. It's not that big of a deal. I think Millsap fits perfectly in Denver because that team is terrible defensively, and he's one of the best defenders in the NBA. He's versatile. He doesn't need the ball too much, but I don't think he gets in the way of your Jokic scenario, and Jokic doesn't play defense. You sort of have to pair him with a defender. I like it all the way around. Good move for Denver. Serge Ibaka is next. I'm clicking on his name, and it's taking forever to load. He signed with the Raptors. Why are you not loading? Serge signed a 3-year, $65 million deal with the Raptors. What do you think?
I don't know why they acquired him in the first place. Can I just say that? Like, I thought the trade to acquire him was strange in the first place. And I didn't understand how he was really going to fit in with the team. I understood that he was a good scorer and he could shoot the three and he's a big man. But, I mean, I didn't see how the combo of he and Valanciunas was going to work on the floor at the same time. And I didn't think he made them any tougher to get past Cleveland. And I still don't think that. So I'm kind of confused as to why they got him in the first place. But considering that, the money seems to be right. They got him on – it's not a max deal or anything like that. So I think he's getting paid the proper amount for what the new market is. So maybe that's the best deal that he could find, and I'm just confused as to why they went out and got him in the first place.
Yeah, I don't like the deal. Can I just say low-key, I'm not sure Serge Ibaka is good anymore. Just like I think people keep buying into Serge Ibaka because a couple of years ago, he was a guy who could switch on to anybody. He could, you know, he was like the prototypical modern NBA guy or like the guy you want. He was Tristan Thompson, with a perimeter shot. That's essentially what he was a couple of years ago. And now I feel like he can't really rebound anymore. He gets kind of this mid-range quagmire a lot of the time. He's still a decent scorer, but I feel like he's not the defender he was a couple of years ago. And, like, he didn't play that well with the Raptors. I understand, like, okay, they're capped out. They got to re-sign their own guys if they can. But, like, I don't know. I guess if you go all in on Lowry, I get why they did it. But now you're sort of stuck with this team, and I don't really like Serge that much anyway at this point, so I don't love it. Otto Porter signed a max deal with the Wizards. They were sort of forced into that situation. I like Otto Porter quite a bit, real quick. It's too much money, but I get why they did it. I'm okay with it. You're good with it?
Yeah, I mean, the money is scary for him at this point in his career, but if they believe in him like you do, then I see why they did it, and it makes sense. The Nets really screwed them on that one, huh?
Yeah, they did, and the Wizards were capped out, so it's either sign Otto Porter or don't sign Otto Porter and sign no one to replace him. You know what I mean? So
yep.
The Wizards are in this scenario where, like, they're not gonna not re-sign him, and then, like, they offered John Wall a max deal, and John Wall's like, I don't know, which is, like, it's already creating this, you know, tornado of around the league of, like, well, what are we, like, is John Wall going to be available in a year? It'll be interesting to see, but let me look down the line if anyone else is interesting, because basically after this, it's just, like, J.J. Redick. I wanted to talk about Nerlens Noel real quick.
Mm-hmm. Because he hasn't signed anywhere, has he?
No. And, yeah, and the thing about it is, It's every year we see one of these. Remember, there's like your Eric Bledsoe from a couple of years ago, your Greg Monroe when he was in Milwaukee. There's always like the player who's a good player, right? That everyone just assumes that the team is going to re-sign them. So nobody, and he's a restricted free agent. So like you can't just make him an offer without tying up your salary on the contract. So then nobody makes this guy an offer, and then the team tries to take advantage of that by lowballing him. And, like, this year's guy is Nerlens Noel, and I feel bad for him because I really like Nerlens Noel, and I think Dallas is trying to get him for, like, way less than he's probably worth.
Of course.
But it'll be interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting.
That's a smart business decision.
If you're Nerlens, do you sign the qualifying for $6 million and then try to run it back next year as a free agent, or do you take their Dallas's offer, which I read somewhere was like $13 million a year? Do you just take that four-year $13 million and suck it up over those 4 years, or do you take the $6 million knowing that you're Noel and you had knee injuries in the past? Do you just take it and then hope to become an unrestricted free agent and get the hell out of Dallas?
Yeah, that's tough, man. If they're really lowballing you and you got traded there in the first place, so maybe you don't want to be there, and you're feeling disrespected. I mean, I feel like you get out as fast as you can and hope that you can prove this to other teams that you can actually play and stay healthy, and just get out of Dodge because that's, I mean, especially if you believe that you're strong and you're gonna and everything's gonna be okay as far as your career and you can still be that type of player. Definitely get out of there, get paid somewhere else, because if this is just a scare tactic, or it's just like, not a scare tactic, but if it's just a smokescreen or something for Dallas to sort of get a low ball offer for this kid, then I don't like it. And he should play hardball. He should go back at him the opposite direction and get out of the contract as soon as he can.
Oh, I forgot Taj Gibson signed in Minnesota, right? Do you think that Minnesota is, like, low-key next year's Utah, or they're just out of nowhere? They're, like, the
No, they're next year's Chicago. I mean, they're the Bulls from a couple of years ago. They got Thibodeau and everything. I mean, they've got a little more scoring punch, I guess, than
I mean, they're not
going to
be one seed.
But what's that?
They're not going to be a one seed. I just mean in terms of – not in terms of play style. I just mean in terms of, like, you know, coming from, like, a lottery team to – just a mid-range playoff team rather than
This should finally be the year that Minnesota makes the playoffs. I will say that people thought it would happen with Kevin Love and people thought Ricky Rubio was going to get them to the playoffs. Minnesota should be a good enough team to make the playoffs in the Western Conference this year. I'm going out on a limb.
All right, fair enough. Well, that's our hot free agency talk. So we have 10 minutes left. We don't have to get to all of these topics. I forgot what else we were supposed to talk about, Eric.
Paul Pierce.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Pierce.
Let's do that.
We did mention him earlier in the show because people will compare him to Jason Tatum. We talked about him – or compare Jason Tatum to him, I should say. And so we talked about him briefly and his footwork and how he became such a great player in the NBA. But he officially – signed a one-day contract, as everybody expected, with the Boston Celtics. And he is retiring from basketball as a Boston Celtic. And I'm sure that Calvin has some sort of criticism about this process. You must hate the one-day contract or something. What do you want to talk about as far as Pierce retiring as a Celtic is concerned?
Well, first of all, of course I hate the one-day contract. The one-day contract is really stupid. Can we just say that right off the top? But it's not, in this case, it's not just that the one-day contract was stupid. It's that in order to create enough roster space to sign Paul Pierce, the Celtics had to cut Demetrius Jackson. No, they were going to cut Demetrius Jackson anyway to open up a roster spot for Yamaselli or whoever down the line. But, like, he wasn't necessarily going to get cut yesterday or today, right? It was today, or was it yesterday when Paul Pierce became a Celtic?
Yesterday.
Yeah, but the point is, can you imagine being the guy who, like, in his contract was already guaranteed for the season, so he was going to get cut anyway, he got paid out, but can you imagine them being like, yeah, we're going to let you go now so we can sign this guy for one day?
Yeah, like, so he can get up some shots, he's going to get some he's going to get his old sneakers back, he's going to get some shots up in the gym, he's going to razz Danny Ainge by wearing Brooklyn Nets shorts to the signing. He's gonna smile, and he's gonna retire a Celtic. That's right. That's tradition. That's the way they do it.
I'm just saying, if you're Demetrius Jackson, don't you like hate Paul Pierce's car or something? Because he's taking up your roster spot.
By the way, you got paid. What are you gonna do with the team from today to the next week? What is he doing? He's not playing basketball with them. What is he doing?
By the way,
if I were him, I'd want to get cut, and I knew I was going to get cut, I want to get cut immediately so I can go start looking for another team.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. But let me ask you this. Since when does the NBA start handing out one-day contracts? I don't remember any. The last time I checked, the shortest contract that could be given out in the NBA is a 10-day contract. So what are the one-day contract shenanigans? No, sign him for the year, give him a minimum contract, put him on the roster, okay?
Wait a minute. Okay, let's time out here. Let's go back because I have to Google this and call you out because Amari Stoudemire did it last year. As he retired from the NBA, he signed a one-day contract with the New York Knicks.
Wow, Amari Stoudemire signed a one-day – first of all, this brings up an entirely different issue for me, which is that if I'm the Suns, I'm furious about that, right? Because Amari Stoudemire is just a Sun. Amari Stoudemire is not a Knick, right? He had one good season with the Knicks, and then he blew out his knee, and it was an albatross contract, and Knicks fans hated him. How do you not go back to Phoenix if you're Amari Stoudemire?
I don't know, but he signed a one-day contract with the New York Knicks, and I found, let's see, there's a whole article on the one-day contract in the New York Times, Calvin. You can go read it if you want. I just found it on Google. That's what you did.
Okay.
And
it's not about
the NBA as much as it is about baseball and a couple of football players. But, like, Hideki Matsui, I guess, signed a one-day contract with the Yankees.
No, yeah. Well, it happens all the time in baseball. It doesn't not happen as much in basketball.
Right. So, Stoudemire.
Like,
keep going on Stoudemire. Go ahead.
Well, this is my thing with all of these one-day contracts. You know what I mean? Like, the NBA has rules. The NBA just ignores their own rules to, like, give Paul – if Paul Pierce was, like, a 23-year-old that the Celtics wanted to sign for one day and then have the contract end, the NBA would be like, no, that's against NBA rules. You know what I mean? It's just fake contract is not really real that annoys me. If you want to put Paul Pierce on your roster, again, you pay him league minimum and follow the NBA guidelines, then I'll say, yes, Paul Pierce retired as a Celtic. But, like, you can agree that Paul Pierce did not retire as a Celtic, right? Or do you buy into this lie that they're telling you with this false one-day contract? That's where I'm at. Give him a 10-day contract. Let him play.
Maybe it is a 10-day contract, and he just retires after the first day. He's a Celtic, whether he retires as one or whether he plays his last game as one or not. He's a Celtic true and true.
No, that's fine. And again, I was going to ask you just as a curiosity when it comes to Pierce, where he sort of ranks on your list of favorite Celtics. And I mean, don't give me, like, any Bill Russell crap because it's like you didn't watch any of those guys. I mean, like, guys you enjoyed. Yeah, he's got to be up there. But yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't be – if you asked me who my favorite Lakers were, I wouldn't be like Wilt, but that'd just be a dumb thing to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, Pierce has got to be one of those guys, right? I hate to say it. I loved Rondo, too, until he became a little bitch and started being a little whiny little guy that – couldn't get along with anyone. Basically, if you're going to just talk about the last 20 years, Kevin Garnett is up there too, right? I mean,
So Pearson, good. I'm going to create the good son scenario for you. All right. Pearson and Garnett are fighting each other and they both fall off a cliff and you rush over to save them and they're both hanging on the edge and you grab each of them with one arm, but you're not strong enough to pull up both Pierce and Garnett. Which one do you let go of to pull the other one up?
Calvin, I would fall over the cliff and plummet to my death with the two of them in hand.
Oh, that's depressing.
The answer is Paul Pierce, right? I mean, you're gonna help Paul Pierce if you're a longtime Celtic fan, but you have to respect Kevin Garnett, and I would hold on to them as long as I could until I made sure that Kevin Garnett knew how much I appreciated him, and then I would let him go and hear him scream expletives on the way down.
I like it. All right, so it looks like we're
over. It is impossible!
Some of this other stuff can carry over to next week, and some of it won't. Yeah, maybe we'll talk about baseball. It's funny, like the Dodgers have one of the the best records in baseball history to this point, and I still can barely muster up time to talk about baseball.
Well, the LA Kings won a Stanley Cup, and you didn't want to talk about that back
hockey
when that happened.
Hockey is not a sport.
Okay, maybe we'll talk about that next week.
Maybe we will. We got nothing but time, man. Summer.
Nothing
of time.
But time. It's the summer. It's the summer. Here we go. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for listening out there in CLNS Media World, the Twitter world. Taj, our first caller, and well, Mad Dog called last week, but has he called us before? The guy in Atlanta, because I feel like he has.
I think he's called the post game show that I've been on, but I don't know if he's called our show specifically.
Fair enough. I feel like I've heard his voice before. Either way, he's a good, definitely a good caller. So we appreciate him listening and everybody else out there listening. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you hopefully with some more information, interesting information, next Tuesday. All right. Bye, Calvin.
Good night, everybody.
Of all the dramatic things, remember?